Good morning to you all. How many of you are rejoicing this morning in daylight savings time? I'm not, but just thought I would. I thought I would mention that. It kind of goes along with a couple of the songs we sang. It's going to take some paper towel up here. We might need to amend our policy of where we put the drinks up here. Okay. We're off to a good start. Okay. Let's just have a word of prayer. Father in heaven, we come this morning. We ask that you would calm our hearts and that you would give us words to say. That you would guide our thoughts, and that we wouldn't get rattled, and that we would be able to remain focused. We ask your blessing in Jesus' name. Amen. So today, some of these thoughts that I'm bringing might be a little bit like soup, like potato soup, that's not all the potatoes are completely soft, if you know what I mean. So we might have to dig into this a little more. Song number 263. It just dumped in there. So, sorry about that. Song number 263. And by the way, Brother Alvin, he read some of the same verses I was going to read this morning. But the last half of verse 3, singing about Jesus, us being, how he looses us from our sin. The weary find eternal rest, and all the sons of want are blessed. Want, in the older English, refers to needs we have. Not just desires, okay? And then I purposely picked song number 65 in the folder. And if you want to briefly look at those words, that would be great. The song is about encouraging ourselves and each other in the Lord. The same words, I'm not sure if Alvin read farther down where it talks about lifting up the arms that hang down and the feeble or the weak knees, but to encourage each other in a way like that, so that we can go on with life. Anyway, the text today is out of 2 Thessalonians 3:13. Brethren, be not weary in well doing. This text is a command. It's an exhortation. It is a plea. It is sandwiched in between verses where Paul writes about those who will not work and those that won't listen. Does that sound familiar to any of you? That's a good way to get discouraged, is when you're rubbing shoulders with people who will not work, where he says they shouldn't eat either. They won't work. And then he talks about, immediately after that, he talks about people who won't listen to sound doctrine, things like that. That's prime real estate to become discouraged in. I mean, it's a great location to find yourselves in to be discouraged. And I think that was the whole nature of what he, of this little phrase here. An old definition for the word weary, having your strength much exhausted by toil or violent exertion. Thank you, Kevin. Fatigued, tired, having your patience exhausted, or the mind yielding to discouragement. That's being weary. And today, I would like to encourage us to think about how easily we become weary and the call to not become weary. These scriptures I'm going to read, they all come from the Tyndale Bible, or the Matthew Bible. And I make no apologies for that, but you're welcome to follow along. And for the most part, it reads very, very similarly. Galatians 6:9 says, "Let us not be weary of well-doing, for when the time is come, we shall reap without weariness." And the King James, I will note, at the end says, "For in due season we shall reap if we faint not." Most of the other old Bibles that I looked into translate that phrase not as conditional on our not fainting, like the King James does, but the idea that we will receive our reward without the memory of the labor involved in receiving it. There's some other verses. John 16:20 says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye shall weep and lament, and the world shall rejoice. Ye shall sorrow, but your sorrow shall be turned to joy. A woman, when she travaileth, has sorrow, because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish, for joy that a man is born into the world. And ye now are in sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart shall rejoice, and your joy shall no man take from you." So that's more or less the concept there. The work may be hard, the work may be wearisome, but we need to fully engage. We need to get there, because we have the promise that when we get there, we shall receive our reward. It's not a payment. It's not something owed us. A reward is usually given not out of duty, but out of simply because of the big-heartedness of the fellow giving it. You give someone, you find a wallet and you return it, they may give you a reward, but that's not because they owe it to you. You owe it to them to do them right and be honest. And so that's the concept. "For when the time is come, in due season, we shall reap without any memory of all of this faintness." So I only have a few other scriptures here. I have a few comments, and we'll just see where this goes. In Isaiah 40, starting in verse 28, "Knowest thou not, or hast thou not heard, that the everlasting God, the Lord, which made all the corners of the earth, is neither weary nor faint, and that his wisdom cannot be comprehended, but that he giveth strength unto the weary and power unto the faint? Children are weary and faint," at least sometimes they are, "and the strongest men fall, but unto them that have the Lord before their eyes shall strength be increased. Eagles' wings shall grow upon them. When they run, they shall not fall, and when they go, they shall not be weary." I am amazed at how children of a certain age, at least, can just go and go and go, and then at the supper table, the headlights just go out. Or we as soon as you give them any task of substance, they just don't have the wherewithal to perform it. And that's the exact picture here. When youth, when children, the thing that, in my observation, the thing that makes the batteries that make children go are motivation, strong motivation. It's something they want to do. And as long as they have something they want to do before their eyes, they will go, and they will go. And adults are kind of like that too. However, as we age, that doesn't work quite as well anymore. But so both failing physically as far as motivation, falling asleep at the supper table, or give them a job to do in the garden or what have you, why you see the motivation isn't there. And so I would just like to point out that if the motivation isn't there, we will find ourselves running out. Now the question is, what is that motivation? Motivate has an interesting word in it. It has the same Greek, a root word as the word motor. To motorize, to motivate, locomotive, it's the mote in there. is the driving force. The key is in verse 31, where this reads, "But unto them that have the Lord before their eyes," which goes right along with, but you read in Hebrews 12, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. If we don't have the Lord before our eyes, let's not be surprised if our motivation isn't there. I found an interesting two verses in Jeremiah verse 51. "O my people, come out of Babylon, that every man may save his life from the fearful wrath of the Lord. Be not faint-hearted, and fear not at every rumor that shall be heard in the land. For every year bringeth new tidings, yea, strange wickedness and lordship." And he goes on and talks about Babylon. And, so I just found that very interesting with the combination of words, faint-hearted, fear, strange tidings, strange rumors. Let's be careful. Let's be careful that whenever we start hearing these things, whatever they may be, that there's not this little thing in us that, ooh, maybe I'm just not sure. Let's be fully confident at whom we're looking towards. We may not understand what's coming. We may not even understand what's here this week, but we're fully confident. And to choose ye this day whom you will serve. It's a choice we have. In Hebrews 6, we have the example of Abraham. And I want you to listen for a word in here. A word in here that's enough to make anyone very tired and weary. "For God is not unrighteous," starting in verse 10, Hebrews 6:10. "For God is not unrighteous that he should forget your work and labor that proceedeth of love, which love showed in his name, which administered unto the saints and yet minister, yea. And we desire that every one of you show the same diligence to the establishing of hope, even unto the end, that ye faint not, but follow them which through faith and patience inherit the promises. For when God made promise to Abraham, because he had no greater thing to swear by, he sware by himself, saying, Surely I will bless thee, and multiply thee indeed. And so after that, he," Abraham that is, "had tarried a long time, he enjoyed the promises." Can someone be brave enough to tell me what the word is in that passage that would fatigue anybody? I did not check how that reads in the King James, so I might be barking up the wrong tree here. The word is the word long. After he had tarried a long time, or he waited, he was patient a long time. And if you do the math, he waited a long time. I forget exactly how long it was. It was at least 15 years. It may have been long, 25 years. I had the wrong 10 there. He waited for 25 years before he inherited the first promise. And some of the promises were yet to come to his descendants. He never enjoyed them. And that was pointed out in Hebrews. In the last part of 11, which we'll read, how they did all these things by faith, and yet they didn't actually get the promises that we experience under the new covenant. And so some of the promises made to Abraham, he never actually saw fulfilled in his time on the earth. And so he waited a long time for what he did get. And I like Tyndale's rendering where he says he enjoyed the promises. He didn't just receive them. He experienced them, and there was an element of joy in that. So, I skipped my questions up here at the top, and I just started right in. But I think it would be good. I was going to ask for a raise of hands of all who have ever felt weary in this house. I have. I'm not asking for peer pressure. Some of you just have never felt weary at all. Is that right? I didn't see anybody. Some of your hands didn't come up. Do you know how you should respond to this sort of weariness? Sometimes it's as simple as going to bed. Sometimes it's just in your head. And sometimes you're just tired. And sometimes it goes deeper than that. And and tied right in with that is a thing that I have never understood. And that's where preachers or ministers or leadership in a church step down. And I'm not just talking about for a short time, but they step down because of burnout. And I would argue that burnout is one of the most unchristian things that we can talk about from this here pulpit. I realize that it's a real thing, but I would argue that based on some of these verses that we've looked at and will still look at, that whoever is experiencing burnout is not actually accepting the things. He is not enjoying the fruits of the promises that God has made to His people. And I want to say that nicely. I want to say that kindly. But I'll just be frank with you. The reason this came to my mind was because I was asked to have an opening, and nothing came. And as I sat last night listening to a sermon, it struck me that I'm letting myself be weary in these things. And this is simply why I'm talking about this morning, because this is me. And you get tired, and the whole thing about the Energizer Bunny is not always true when it comes to physical life. And sometimes we need to do what we need to do in spite of how we feel. And so that's what we're endeavoring to do today. And the Lord has an answer for our condition. For our condition, He does. Now, in Hebrews 11, I'm breaking in verse 32. And what shall I more say? The time would be too short for me to tell of Gideon. Interesting side note, Gideon in Judges 8:4, and then Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, both he and the 300 men that were with him, very faint, and yet followed the chase. That's why Gideon is mentioned. And there's a long story in Judges about Gideon. But that's how Gideon behaved. Barak, he was a little bit fearful and trembling. He went to see Deborah. Deborah gave him some encouragement, and he was still frightened. I think you would be as well. And I don't understand that woman's faith, but she had some and he didn't. And somehow he got some, and he went after all this large army, and he was afraid to. And she said, because you're leaning on me so much, there will be a victory, but the glory will go to a woman. I'm assuming he thought it would go to Deborah. And that wasn't the case. It went to Jael, who drove the nail through the man's head. However, this man did what he was told to do, and he sure didn't feel like it. He felt bad enough he went to a prophetess. And Samson, can you imagine Samson in the prison, finally coming to his senses? He had no eyeballs left, and all he had was God. That's all he had left. And when they led him out to the pillar, to the pillars he leaned on, that's what he asked for, was to take, as he gave his life to fulfill the thing God had sent him for. That's why he was going to avenge his people, the Philistines. That's what he was there for. And he gave his life doing that. And he called upon the Lord. And time would be too short. It would take far too long to explore the lives of all these men. You think of Jephthah. And we look at Jephthah and we think he made a foolish vow and all these things. But one thing about Jephthah, he never backed down. And when you look into his life, which we did, it's been several months ago, when we went through Judges as a family, Jephthah had quite a few brothers. Jephthah was the firstborn of his father. He was not a son of his father's wife. He was the son of a concubine. And the boy was treated as the firstborn of his father until the real sons grew up and kicked him out. And they chased him off. And it sounds to me like Jephthah somehow learned something of the fear of the Lord before that happened, because when his brother's town was in trouble, they came back to get him. And they were like, "Look, Jephthah, I can just see them with their hands in their pockets and shuffling their feet, and we told you to go, but if you're willing to come back and help us out, we'll make you the leader." And he didn't. If I read that correctly, he did not necessarily take them up on being their leader. That wasn't the thing he jumped at, but he was willing to come back and help them. And I don't think this man was an Old Testament man. He was not. He did not come from a one husband, one wife marriage. He came from circumstances we would disapprove of. Those were the circumstances of his birth. And then he was kicked out. And he lived under the old covenant. And he had all those things going against him. And yet he was magnanimous enough that he agreed to come help them. He agreed to come help them basically without preconditions. Now, he put preconditions on some of the people that he asked for help later on, and he ended up punishing them. The thing about Jephthah was, he was no quitter. He misunderstood some things, and maybe he sacrificed his daughter, and maybe there were other other alternate explanations for all that, but the fact remains, he was faithful, and he did. He was not weary to do that which God called him to. David, Samuel, the rest of the prophets. You think about Jeremiah and all the weeping he did. Hebrews 11:33, which through faith subdued kingdoms. Listen to all the things these people did. They subdued kingdoms. How did they do it? They did it through faith. And faith being exercised. Faith properly exercised. I will be able to talk one of these days. Faith properly exercised precludes or excludes weariness. It has to. You can't have faith and let yourself go slack. I'm talking about sitting down in a chair and just forgetting about it. That's not faith. These people in the old covenant, they subdued kingdoms. They wrought righteousness, or that means they did righteous things. They obtained the promises. They stopped the mouths of lions. They quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword. Of weak were made strong. So some of these characters, like Gideon, like Barak, different of these men, they were absolutely shrinking violets when it came to society. Gideon was threshing wheat or barley, whatever it was, in a threshing floor that was disguised as a wine press. It was not the season for grapes, so it was a great place to go thresh your grain, because the Midianites wouldn't think about looking there. And it's just different of these men. They waxed valiant in fight. So what's interesting about the word wax is there's two words that go hand in hand in older English, waxing and waning. And to wax means to grow, and to wane means to go away or to diminish. And usually in a fight, your strength wanes. But to the men of faith, according to how I'm reading this, the men of faith, they get stronger as the fight goes on. And that's a challenge that I'm laying before myself and before all the rest of you today, that as we experience life and as things get worse, that we get stronger instead of weaker. And I think that's what will divide between those that have faith and those that have it not. It's interesting to think about. They turned to flight the armies of the aliens, and the women received their dead raised to life again. Others were racked. That means they were stretched. They were pulled. They would not be delivered, that they might receive a better resurrection. That is kind of an incomprehensible thought to our human flesh. That because of the hope we have, the living expectation that we possess, that we would willingly give up this life with all its troubles in order to receive a better resurrection. Others tasted of mockings and scourgings, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, hewn asunder, that means chopped apart, were tempted, were slain with swords, walked up and down in sheepskins and goatskins. That means they didn't have any of the fineries in life left over. They were in need, in tribulation and vexation, which the world was not worthy of. They wandered in wilderness, in mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. These were all people, just like, excuse me, like Gideon, like Barak, like Samson and Jephthah. And Daniel, he stopped the mouths of lions. He didn't, but my God, he Nebuchadnezzar always referred to, but your God. And through his faith, Daniel stopped the mouth of lions. There was many other examples like this. And these all, through faith, obtained good report and received not the promise. The promise having come through Jesus Christ. God providing a better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. And that's very interesting. So if God would have allowed them, the old Jewish people, to have received all the promises, all the blessings under that old covenant, it would have excluded the Gentiles like you and I. And so he held them back in one way. He held them back so that they with us might become perfect, might be made perfect. Wherefore, let us also, seeing that we are compassed with so great a multitude of witnesses, lay away all that presseth down, and the sin that hangeth on us. And when I read that in here, it's like a tractor weight. So you put a lot of weights on a tractor to pull so the wheels don't spin. But you don't put weights on a boat, because it'll make the boat sink. You certainly don't carry any more weight than you need to if you're actually running. And the picture here is not so much of a race as a competitive race, but it's actually a battle. It's a war. The press is down and the sin that hangeth on us, and let us run with patience unto the battle that is set before us. It's something that we need to persevere through. Remember, this battle, we can wax valiant in fight. That's something that I'll be honest, I have a hard time with. And yet the thing that the reason for that song, Courage, Brother, it is an effort. We're kidding ourselves and everyone else if we say, well, it's just easy. The Lord will just work this all through me, and I'm sorry. But you are walking around, your soul is walking around inside a temple made of flesh and bone. That's just, and the thing will fight against you if nothing else will. And Jesus said, watch and pray that you fall not into temptation. There were different things that he said to that effect, to gird up the loins of your mind, I'm not finding the right words here. But anyway, on down here. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, which for the joy that was set before him, abode where he endured, where he lived there on the cross. He despised the shame and sat down on the right hand of the throne of God. Do you realize that you can despise something without actually having... You're looking down your nose at something without actually having just awful thoughts about it. By faith, you can despise your own flesh. It's like, I know I know that you don't feel real good right now, but this is the thing that needs to be done. And in that sense, you are despising your flesh. All too often, we despise others, and that's kind of counterproductive. And is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider, therefore, how that he endured such speaking against him of sinners, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. And here again, Jesus is held up as the great example. As others told lies about him, as they hit him, as they Psalm says they pulled his beard, they spit in his face. They did all these things to him. And we think, oh, that's amazing. Well, the Hebrew writer is saying, you know, look at Jesus, the man God, the God man who went before us. Because he's making all of his the grace that was available to Christ as he looked at the cross, he is making available to us today. And that is a thing that we would do well to get a hold of that. For ye have not yet resisted unto bloodshedding, and I think none of us in here have, striving against sin. There were even people that resisted unto bloodshedding, as martyrs, as people that died in a wreck, maybe. But it wasn't necessarily striving against sin. And so, if that's really all we have to contend with, is the desires our flesh has, I think we need to be ashamed of ourselves, and we need to truly ask for this grace that he is willing to give. My son, and ye have forgotten. So not only are we being slack, we're also forgetting the consolation or that strong comfort which he speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither faint when thou art rebuked of him. And some of us, we get really discouraged and dejected when we get a correction. And what's interesting about corrections, corrections are not even necessarily criticisms. They may come in the form of a criticism, but the thing is not necessarily negative. A correction is for our benefit, and we need to somehow accept this. Neither faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. Yea, and he scourgeth every son that he receiveth. So that means God will take us through some hard things. He will take you through hard things. It's the Lord doing the chastening. It's the Lord doing the scourging. Do we know what a scourging consists of? It's not the kind of spankings that we give at our house. I'll be honest with you. A scourging is far worse than that. And the Lord does that for those sons that he wants to perfect. It's interesting. Anyway, I'm going to skip on down here. Verse 11, no manner chastising for the present time seemeth to be joyous but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it bringeth the quiet fruit of righteousness unto them which are therein exercised. Stretch forth, therefore, again the hands which were let down and the weak knees, and see that ye have straight steps unto your feet, lest any halting turn out of the way. Yea, let it rather be healed. In Luke 18, in verse 1, the last part of the verse, Jesus, right before the parable of the unjust judge, he says, Luke, the gospel writer says, he put forth this parable unto them, signifying that men ought always to pray and not to be weary. And I guess the challenge that I want to leave with us today is, instead of letting worry and faint-heartedness overcome you, regardless of what you're feeling, and maybe you're just you've had a very busy week, or maybe a very busy month. It's pretty clear what we ought to be doing instead of letting our hands hang down, and please, and if anyone spends time like this, forgive me, but it's not as popularly advertised. you know, you need to go on a vacation. You need to get yourself this little hut, thatch roofed hut on the beach, and put your feet up and drink your lemonade, and enjoy the palms and the sand. And you know, there may be a time for that, but not after the manner of the world. The battle, Jephthah and Gideon, that's not how they won their battles. Was by getting into it knee deep, and they're like, oh boy, I need a break. And then some of these men, they led their country for quite some time, not even by choice. They came to them and asked them, would you do this for us? And Gideon turned down being made king. He had the opportunity to be the first king in Israel, and he said, no, he doesn't want to be the king. God will be your king. And but they came to him with these requests, and so they led their nation. On top of being called to serve for this one instance, they had to deal with these people for the rest of their life. And so, yeah, I don't know if Gideon ever went to the beach. That's not what I'm trying to say, and I think you all know what I mean by that. Holding faith. I like the word. I like the terminology holding faith a lot more than I like the words having faith. They mean the same thing. But when you hold on to something, you grasp it. You take a hold. You do something with it rather than just having it in your possession. And having faith, holding faith, overcoming, all of these things are directly tied into the commandment to not be weary and to faint. I would like to, I don't know how well we know it, but the other song that came to my mind is song number 83 in the folder. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. O soul, are you weary and troubled? I can't even quote it, but that encapsulates this encouragement in a good way. Thank you.